home as well. Set up your room. So, the only prayer request, I realized that I forgot to mention one. We need to pray for a family in our Acropad family. Mark and Susan Bazerjean Smith, their son Zach, who has been living in an assisted care facility, has been in the hospital and had to undergo surgery yesterday. He had a bowel blockage, and they had to remove a significant portion of his large bowel. He's going to have a colostomy bag for the rest of his life. So he's been in some recovery, and this has been a long haul for the whole family, basically. So I'm a Facebook friend of Susan's and of Mark's, but Susan's been posting and updating everyone. So if you can remember that family in your prayers. So, in case you hadn't been paying attention this morning, today's Mother's Day. Today, too, when you follow along, you'll be seeing a few things pop up. There are a few memes that I thought you might like, and if you start to drowse off, just watch the memes as they come up. Some of them are little stamps of humor that I like that I found on Pinterest. So today we're going to deconstruct some of the myths of not just motherhood, but of also being a woman. But first we're going to start with a little bit of a history lesson. If you're from West Virginia, you have to start with this. It's just a requirement. So Mother's Day was founded in West Virginia. But founded by Pennsylvania. Anna Jarvis was from Philadelphia. And her mother lived in Grafton, West Virginia. And Anna held the first Mother's Day service in St. Andrew's Methodist Church in Grafton. And she did that to honor her mother, who'd been an advocate for peace and had cared for soldiers on both sides of the Civil War. Anna's mother and a friend of hers had worked for over 40 years to establish Mother's Day, a day for all mothers of all nationalities to band together to promote a day to amicably settle international questions and to work toward the great and general interests of peace. Well, they weren't taking on a lot, now were they? Well, Anna's mother never saw this come to fruition in her lifetime, but Anna did see a day set aside in 1907 to honor the memory of her mother. She'd been working toward a day to honor all mothers since her mother died in 1905. She wanted to see a day set aside to honor mothers because she believed that your mother is the person who's done more for you than anyone in the world. In 1908, U.S. Congress rejected a proposal for a National Mother's Day, but in 1911, mostly through Anna's efforts, every state in the nation, starting with West Virginia, of course, had designated Mother's Day as a holiday. Finally, on May 9th, 1914, exactly 107 years ago today, President Woodrow Wilson entered a proclamation designating the second Sunday in May as a national holiday to celebrate mothers. So a little bit about West Virginia moms and their theory of things. I know a little bit about some of them. One in particular is Chris's grandma Lyons. So I'm going to give you a little bit of her theory of motherhood and her story that Jenna brought forward. Everyone in Chris's family knows the theory and the rule that holding hands equals going to prison. Did you know that? If you're a boy and you hold hands with a girl, you will go to prison. That was what she told you. Told all the boys growing up, she brought them in, she sat down and said, holding hands leads to hugging. Hugging leads to kissing. Kissing leads to having babies. Having babies leads to dropping out of school. Dropping out of school leads to not having a job. Leads to writing bad checks. Write bad checks, leads to going to prison. What's up? Now you have it. West Virginia wisdom from a West Virginia mother, holding hands, equals going to prison. So, pass that on, would you? So, what you also need to know, though, about Anna Jarvis is that she eventually began to despise the holiday that she created. Commercialization took over the true intent of the day that she established. Jarvis, who was never a mother herself, envisioned a day where children would just make cards and spend time with their mothers as a way to honor them. Instead, flower companies, candy companies, and greeting card companies, even the first lady of that time, took Mother's Day as an opportunity to line their coffers by urging children to spend their money rather than their time with their mothers. And in the end, Jarvis spent considerable funds in lawsuits against companies that commercialized the day, and in a campaign to end the holiday. She even got arrested in Philadelphia by protesting because someone was selling different items at a Civil War memorial convention that was being held. All of her campaigns were unsuccessful as the capitalization of the day had taken root, and it's estimated that more than $20 billion is spent each year on Mother's Day gifts, cards, and experiences. So now we've got the history of Mother's Day completed, so let's get into today's message. Today, God led me pretty much kicking and screaming to the passage that I'm going to work on. I have practically begged Pastor Hubs to never, ever, ever, ever do a Mother's Day message on the passage that I'm about to do a Mother's Day message on, Proverbs 31. I would almost bet you that you could go into half the churches in America today and hear a Mother's Day message based on Proverbs 31. You could turn on about any TV show based upon a family that has a pastor in it, and that fake TV preacher is going to do a Mother's Day sermon on Proverbs 31. And why wouldn't they? This is how it begins. Epilogue. The wife of noble character. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still night and provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it out of her earnings and plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and risks the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hand to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity and can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, as he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. I've got a drink here. Truly, may God bless the reading of his word. So I'm about to go into this. Ladies, I don't know about you, but when I hear a Mother's Day message about to shape up around these verses, I start to cringe just a little. Because this chick, this Stepford wife, she's a little unattainable to me. She's a reminder of everything that I am not. I mean, does she make a mistake? She's perfect. She must have a clone. The verses even say that she has servants. But why? Why does she need them? She gets up before it's light and she makes food for her family and the servants. She also does all of these things. She owns and operates her own fashion empire. You'll find that verse 24. She's a real estate titan. That's in verse 16. She operates a home kitchen, verse 15. She runs a mission project, verse 20. She operates a vineyard, verse 16. She's a wool and flax trader, verse 13. She's a teacher, orator, and economist, that's verses 26 and 27. She not only makes her clothes, she makes her own sheets, comforters, and she probably makes her own towels and curtains, too. That's verse 22. She's also apparently quite the politician's wife as well. That's in verse 23. And her kids, when she wakes up, them up in the morning, when she gets them up, remember this if you've had little ones, when she wakes up, they jump out of bed and they call her blessed. This one right here, when I would wake her up in the morning, that's all but she was calling me. And especially not her sister. There was groaning, but I don't think those were wordless groans to the Lord. No. And her husband, he praises her as he should. And I bet you couldn't have guessed this one. She's not idle. You think? Well, that's a newsflash, Dick Tracy. Did you see all the things she just did? And the Bible doesn't say this about her. But I bet she's pretty and skinny, too. I find it really hard to like this broad. It's really new. Can you tell? The wife of noble character. She's extra. She's a lot, and she gives me anxiety just thinking about or even trying to be all of the things she is. But there's a couple of things I think we need to consider. First, she's not real. Did you know that? Did you? You guys are like, I can tell. But you're probably thinking, Greta, she's in the Bible, she's spelled out in the scriptures, so she has to be real, right? But go back to the beginning of chapter 31. It begins, the sayings of King Lemuel, an inspired utterance his mother taught him. Listen, son of my womb. Listen, my son, the answer to my prayers. Do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. The verses that follow from 10 through the end of the chapter, these are characteristics and descriptors. They are a wish list of all the things that the king's mother wanted for her son and her future queen. This Proverbs 31 woman is basically a biblical Match.com dating profile. We ladies have been trying to live up to a fictional wish list that this queenly mama bear put together for her future queen. Part of me, the really bad part of me, really hopes that she got what she wished for, lived to see it, and had to live with that chick. Yeah. At this point, Peg, that's the point at which Chris looked at me and said, Greta Lynn! But ladies, you know what? I'm here to tell you, we're just as bad. We often look at other moms and other women and measure our successes and failures as moms at how we stack up to how other women are, or how we perceive them to be. And even worse, our magnifying glass by which we measure ourselves is often skewed to the negative. God made each of us and our situations different from one another. We cannot and we must not look to someone else and how their life is turning out to see if we are succeeding. Girls, we're too hard on ourselves. We look at all the things we didn't get just right and forget about the outcomes in the situation. We don't look at the big picture. We focus on the tiny and the most often unnoticed flaw in the artwork of our lives. If you've ever done one of those classes where, we've done them here at the church, where you paint, where someone guides you through and painting all of these things, when you're up close on it and you're looking at it, you're like, well, I didn't look what she, like what she had as paint up there. Hers looks great. And what they tell you to do is you don't look at it up close. You step back from the artwork. And when you step back, well, it didn't look so bad after all. And that's because we're always focusing on the little tiny things. And in the big picture of life, the little tiny things sometimes aren't what matters most. So when Pastor Hubs and I first moved back to his hometown area, we would invite my granny to come and stay with us, usually for a week. It was closer. It was only a couple hours from where she lived. And I treasured those times. I love that woman, and I miss her so much. And if you ask Pastor Hubs today, what woman in my family I most resemble and my character most resembles, he'll tell you that was going to be, it's that lady. On one of those visits, she turned to me and said, Greta, I don't know how you do it all. You get up, you get the kids off to school, work all day, take these girls to their after-school activities, come home, get supper around, keep up with the housework, help with homework, and more. I never could have done it. She forgot he helped, I think. But I looked at her and I was baffled. All I could see was the clutter in my house, the laundry piled up, the dust bunnies and their babies. The fact that the kids were almost late for school that day, the looming deadlines at work, the kids' favors for the party at school, they weren't homemade like the other moms were. I had to go out and buy them. And I could just go on and on about all my failures. For me, Granny was the picture of everything that I was doing wrong as a mom. She had done it all right. And at that moment, I reminded her that she didn't have it so easy. No, she didn't have a job that she had to go to work to, that she had to leave the house for, but she raised a garden, raised three kids, cooked for farmhands, helped butcher, washed clothes on a wringer washing machine. Now for you youngins, that means she had to heat the water up and boil it and do all of that stuff to actually wash the clothes if she needed hot water. She didn't have a microwave for most of the prepared foods that I have the luxury of using. She canned her own foods for winter. She made her own quilts and some of her own clothes. She volunteered in the community. She helped out on the farm where it was needed, all the while chasing three kids. I said, Granny, how did you do it all? And at that moment, we looked at each other and realized, we were such bad chicks at doing mothering after all. I tell you that story to say this. Let's all be encouragers of each other. Let's stop measuring our successes and our failures by some other woman's measuring stick. We're not all one size fits all. We're not all the things that this fictional dating profile, the Proverbs 31 woman would be. And let's look at someone else who at the outset didn't seem to have it all either. When I was putting together this message for today, I actually started out, I've said it before, I have an idea of where I'm going. I was actually starting in Exodus and then Noah was going to go to Ruth. And then God kept putting Proverbs 31 in my head. And I was like, no, I don't like that. He said, I know you don't, but you need to learn something. So I know what happens if you don't do what the Lord wants you to do. And I really didn't want a smackdown. So I'm okay, we'll go to Proverbs 31. But I really like the book of Ruth for a lot of different reasons. And one of them is because of the relationships that are described in that book. I wanted to use that book to look at the fact that this day is hard for a lot of different women. Some of us today are experiencing our first Mother's Day without our moms here on earth with us, or it's a reminder that they're not here. Some of you moms are experiencing a Mother's Day without your children here with you, either because they've gone on to heaven, or because they're that prodigal child that you're still waiting to come home. And others maybe never had the opportunity to have a child at all. And it's just a rough day. Some people have a loss because they don't have that mother-daughter or mother-son relationship that they feel that they ought to have had. And you just wake up on this day and want to hit the snooze and have it be Monday and have this day be over. I've had my share of a few of those Mother's Day experiences. I can tell you that for sure. Pastor Hubs and I tried to have children for years and years. And going to church or a restaurant on Mother's Day was just torture. Because we just couldn't have children, and God blessed us with two beautiful girls in a way that we didn't ever see coming. I've also had the experience of having a mom that's hard to live with, even 200 miles away. Some of you I've told it was like hugging a porcupine. Why would you want to go back? So I understand how this day is hard. But then God kept putting that Proverbs 31 message in front of me. And then he did something else. And in my research, he put an article before me of another author who tied Proverbs 31 and the book of Ruth together. So I'm now leaning on her research to tie this in for you a little bit more. So Ruth was a daughter-in-law that probably didn't meet her mother-in-law's dating profile either for her sons. If you look in the book of Ruth, Naomi was from Bethlehem, and she was Jewish, and so were her children. But Ruth was a Moabite. She was as far away, ideologically, faith-based, everything from Naomi's culture and faith as she could be. Probably not Naomi's ideal pick for her boys. And then tragedy struck. Naomi's husband and her sons died. Naomi was in Moab, a widow, and no sons to support her, and only these two Moabite daughters-in-law in tow. But Naomi had heard that the famine had been lifted back in Bethlehem and decided she wanted to go back. So she told her daughters-in-law that and said, "You two go on back to your own families now. Go on, run along." And at first they said no, they would go with her. So she kept urging them, "Really? Go back to your own families." So the first one did. But Ruth told her no. She said, "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God." The verses go on to say that once Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her to return to her family, and the two women went back to Bethlehem. And upon Naomi's return to Bethlehem with her baggage, Ruth, she was greeted by folks, and there was quite, and the Bible uses this word, there was a stir upon him returning. And part of that stir was probably the fact that Naomi came back with this Moabite girl. So Naomi was so disenfranchised that she told them all, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, because God has made my life bitter." So as the two widows began to live their lives in Bethlehem, they knew it wasn't going to be easy. They didn't have a man to supply anything for them. Nothing to supply their livelihood, their food, their basic needs. There was no way for them to earn a living. But Ruth volunteered to go to the fields. It was harvesting time. And she volunteered to go behind the harvesters and glean what they had left behind, to find something for them to eat so that they could survive. But she didn't just go and do it. She asked Naomi's permission first. This was a risky proposition. People knew she was a Moabite. She could have been assaulted. She could have been killed. She knew this too. But she did what was necessary to aid her mother-in-law. Remember too, that Ruth could have been at home with her family, living pretty well. But she made the choice to come with Naomi, to care for her because she had no one. We know that this act of following behind the harvesters caught the eye of Boaz. But Boaz was a well-off family member of Naomi's deceased husband. Once he discovered who Ruth was, he ordered her protection and her provision. Boaz was impressed by the commitment and love that Ruth had shown Naomi, knowing that she could be back in Moab with her family. So once Ruth returned safely home with the prepared food for Naomi and a portion of the harvest, Naomi was curious to know where she'd gone that day. After Ruth told her about her day, a plan began to hatch in Naomi's mind. It was time to find a home for Ruth. She set about to matchmaking. Ruth was obedient and followed her direction. And in the end, Ruth weds Boaz and has a child, a little boy. The end of this chapter tells us that Naomi cared for the child, and the women in town stated, "Naomi has a son." We also know from the end of the book of Ruth that this son will go on to become the grandfather to a king, King David. And we know from the rest of the Bible that this will be the line of the man who will be an earthly father to the King of Kings. Ruth, the unwanted daughter-in-law, who failed to tick off all the boxes of the mother-in-law's Match.com boxes in the dating profile, the commoner, the Moabite, she ends up having all the characteristics of the noble woman, the royalty woman, and the Proverbs 31 woman, but she does it in an attainable way. And we can do that too. See, I've made my peace with the Proverbs 31 woman through all of this. But we can only do it as long as we strive to achieve her characteristics and not her persona. Let's stop trying to be perfect. Let's stop trying to be other people. But instead, let us strive to be loving, supporting, hardworking, caring, discerning, giving. Let us lead by example. Let us play to our strengths. Let us share what we've learned. Let us strive to live in strength and dignity. But most importantly, let's live out verses 30 and 31. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. You see, when we have done all of these, we are living a life that is pleasing to God, leaning into Him to provide for us, permitting him to direct our path forward and living a life that bears the fruit of the Spirit, not only in us, but also in our families. Ladies, may God bless you on this Mother's Day, all of you, because I can tell you, whether you've been born a child or not, whether you've adopted a child, we are all mothers to somebody. You are all daughters and sons to somebody. And if you haven't been, go out and find someone. Be a Ruth. And if you have a Ruth that comes knocking on your door, don't be a reluctant Naomi, because we all need each other. We're going to have our closing hymn. During that closing hymn, if you have a prayer concern, please come forward. The deacons will be more than happy to pray with you. If you want to turn your life over to God, please come forward. We'll be happy to pray with you about that decision as well. At the close of that hymn, I believe our pastor wants to close us in prayer today with a special Mother's Day prayer, and then we will go to our praise and worship service. So our closing hymn, I Am a Woman, and I wore my animal print today so you could hear me roar.